Welcome back to Hardware Unboxed for Q&A part two for February, maybe February version January.
Yep, that's
that works
it.
Well.
Rolls off the tongue beautifully.
January.
Yep.
The January Q&A. So part one's on the channel right now if you want more questions answered. But yeah, we've got more questions for you in this one. But before we do...
Today's sponsor spot is brought to you by Thermal Grizzly and their CryoSheet graphene thermal pads, which are an excellent alternative to thermal pastes. They offer very high thermal conductivity with no liquid components, so they can't dry out and therefore don't degrade over time like pastes and even liquid metals. CryoSheet is very easy to use, it's extremely durable, and is available in a range of sizes to suit most applications. I've personally done some high-end GPU testing with CryoSheet, and the results were impressive, very similar in fact to that of liquid metal, but without the mess, and of course, no risk of drying out. So for more information, please check the link in the video description. Alright, next question here. Intel seems to be enabling APO for certain Alder Lake and Raptor Lake processors. So that's good. Along with adding more games. Do you think it is close to becoming a relevant feature? So first of all, I did cover this for the 14th gen processors. They've now opened it up, which is what I called for them to do. So I guess that's great that the community got behind that and encouraged Intel to do that, because it's a software-based feature that really should be supported by all LGA 1700 processors with E-cores of some sort of capacity. So that's good. Becoming a relevant feature of the future. Well, it depends on the games that get added and how much of a performance uplift you get in those games. I think Tim's brought up an article. I did see some information on this. I do want to cover it. So this is something that we will cover over the next month, hopefully. Mm-hmm. But the games list looked a bit weird, and the performance uplifts in the games weren't nearly as impressive as what we'd seen in other games, at least the claims that I saw.
Yeah, so they've added... So the original two games that it debuted in were Metro Exodus and Rainbow Six Siege, right?
Which,
so,
good gains in both of those games.
Since then, apparently, according to this PC Gamer article that I've brought up, they have added Guardians of the Galaxy, F-122, Strange Brigade, World War Z, Dirt 5, and World of Warcraft.
So hang on, go through those again. So,
Guardians of the Galaxy.
Which no one's really... That's a single-player game. Yep. It doesn't really have much replayability.
F-122, which so is not the latest version of
so
that.
So not F1 23, game. And 24 will be out soon-ish.
So Strange Brigade and World War Z, which is similar to Guardians of the Galaxy.
Strange Brigade was actually a really cool quality game, but no one really played it, and it was out like 2 years ago or something.
A while ago.
Yep. So that, and you don't need more FPS in Strange Brigade on a 14th gen processor.
So World War Z, Dirt 5, World of Warcraft. So Dirt 5 again, sort of like an older game.
So World of Warcraft is probably the only relevant title that people still play out of all of those.
I would have thought out of this whole list, including the original games, that Rainbow Six Siege and World of Warcraft are probably the games that people are playing now at the moment.
Yep.
And Metro Exodus is a big title. Guardians of the Galaxy was a big title as well, but those are
people
older single-player games that most people have played at this point.
Yeah, and I mean, like, while getting 10%, 20% more performance in those games is great, if you've got a brand new 14th gen processor, you're probably running a relatively new GPU that's already churning through those games, and you'll be, especially in Metro Exodus, you'll be GPU limited anyway.
Yeah, so, I think the issue with this APO feature is it still is Intel cherry-picking the games and only including them when they know that it gives a performance
sure.
uplift?
Sure, yeah, that's what they're doing. Well, they've said that.
Yeah,
They openly said from the get-go that APO won't offer a performance boost in all games, so they're essentially doing that.
Yeah, so the fact they haven't included it for titles like your Cyberpunk 2077, Starfield, the sort of more
Hogwarts
relevant to
Legacy
today,
even.
Big like Hogwarts Legacy was apparently the biggest game of 2023 in terms of sales. So, you know, if they're not able to get a performance uplift out of those games and they have to go back to your Strange Brigades and those sort of things to provide a performance uplift, it's hard to say how relevant it would be. You'd
certainly,
probably gear towards no.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's certainly more relevant than it was, and the fact that they've opened it up to support more processors, I don't have a detailed support list in front of me, but I know they've opened it up to support more processors, so that's good. So it's definitely improving, but is it going to be a great feature for the Intel platform? And probably not really, no. I don't think so.
What are your thoughts on the new RTX 3050 6GB? Well, maybe I should say the new RTX 3050 6GB. If you had to guess, why does NVIDIA offer previous gen cards as their new ultra budget gaming cards? For example, the GTX 1630 was released during the RTX 3000 series instead of having an RTX 3040 or 3030.
Well, my assumption is they're moving old inventory that they haven't been able to move, and they're wanting to do so at like a more competitive, more attractive price.
Mm-hmm.
But rather than reduce the price of the silicon, they're trying to maximize the margins on the silicon and just offer less VRAM. Mm-hmm. And also in this instance, it could be, it seems to me like they're selling somewhat defective bin silicon.
Yeah, that's right.
So they're cutting off. So it may be more about that than anything else, to be honest. But yeah, my understanding is obviously 2 GB less VRAM capacity, but then there's less memory bandwidth. So you go from a 128-bit to, I think, 96-bit would probably be what you'd end up with. And then that would reduce the bandwidth from, it's probably only like just over 200 gigs for the 8-gig card off the top of my head. So it's going to reduce the memory bandwidth. Memory capacity is being reduced. They're also reducing, as I understand it, the SM count as well. So the CUDA cores will be reduced.
It's not really an RTX 3050.
No, it's not. That, I guess when it boils down to it, it's not an RTX 3050 at all. It's RTX 3040. Because less cores, less VRAM, less bandwidth, essentially less of everything. I think the only thing that's probably the same is probably the ROPs, texture mapping units. There's be fewer of those as well. So it's a cut down 3050 that for some reason is still called a 3050. So it's just more sort of dodgy NVIDIA. It really is. There's no other way to put it. That's really piss poor from NVIDIA. It's anti-consumer. It's a bad practice. They seem to continue to do it. They like to do it in the low end. They seem to be very comfortable rolling low-end buyers. It's a pretty disgusting product, to be honest. We'll be buying one. We'll be looking into it. Based on everything I'm saying now, I can't imagine it's going to be a very positive content piece for NVIDIA. It's not good.
Not the first time they've done even in that series, because there was the 3060 8GB as well.
The GT 1030 was obviously, notoriously bad product. Yeah. So with the DDR4 desktop memory, essentially.
I mean, you can see why they've done it, keeping in the 3000 series as opposed to the 4000 series. It isn't a new Ada Lovelace product. So
it's such a slow product.
So, the reason why it's not called like a 4050 or 4040 or whatever is obviously because they want to keep it within that same product lines and Ampere Silicon. So they're keeping it RTX 3000. Same with the GTX 1630. They didn't call that an RTX 3030 because it didn't have ray tracing capabilities or DLSS capabilities. So it was part of that line. So
ray tracing and DLSS are sort of laughable features on such a product. And it's not a good product.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't want to say too much more at this point in time, but looking at the Australian prices, it looks like at most it'll be $50 to $60 less than the 8GB fully fledged model. So it's not even that much of a saving. And I think the Gigabyte model was only $30 or $40 Australian cheaper for the 6GB version. So it's all round bad.
Yeah, it's about perception as well. Like when it comes to these, they're trying to push you towards 40 series higher tier products. That's why they're always shafting low-end buyers, why the cards are always released so late. You don't ever get your 4060 at the same time as your 4090 because they'd much rather you buy 4090. So
they're essentially saying, stop being poor or we'll scam you.
Well, that's right. The reason why they're selling this for less than $200 US over in the States.
Yeah.
The reason why they're selling that for $200 as opposed to a 40 series product is so that you feel like it's old. Mm-hmm. So that you're looking, I've only got $200 to spend. That's right. I'm getting the old garbage crap, right?
They want you to feel bad.
So they want you to feel bad so that you're like, I really should be spending $300 to get the new 40 series, which has got the 40 series features, it's got frame generation, all that stuff, right? So that's why they're doing that. And I don't know, is that a better method than the AMD thing where they've previously like refreshed the same part as a new, like the RX 480 becomes an RX 580, but it's basically just the same thing, but they bring it up to a new line. They haven't been doing that recently.
Not great, but at the same time, it's nowhere near as terrible as re-releasing the same product, the same product name as a vastly inferior product.
That's right.
That very bad. So Anyway, you'll definitely be getting a dedicated video about that, because the second those things land in Australia, I'll be snapping one up.
Mm-hmm.
And look, I could be well off base here. Don't know how, but I imagine it's going to be very negative video. So look forward to that.
Right, Steve, I know you've been keeping up with the rumor mill big time at the moment. You know everything, mm-hmm. you're watching all those channels mm-hmm. that cover it. So do you think RTX 5000 will add anything to the table, or will it be another Lovelace situation? So top card is good, but everything else is meh at best.
Yeah, so pure speculation, having no idea what the rumors are suggesting or whatever.
Are they accurate?
I don't even know what rumors there are, but my expectation would normally be for the next generation of GPUs to offer quite a compelling improvement in terms of cost per frame,
mm-hmm.
and probably have less new features to offer. That would be my guess. It seems to be like we've talked about, like, you know, Intel did the TikTok.
Mm-hmm.
It seems almost like NVIDIA and AMD, to a degree, though they're just copying, have adopted that approach where one generation offers quite a nice performance uplift. So we saw that with like Pascal. We saw that with the GeForce 30 series. Though that was, you know, cryptocurrency sort of spoilt that party. So I expect we will see that with the GeForce 50 series. That's really it. But the big but here is AI. If that's still going strong and there's a huge amount of demand there, then, yeah, hard to say what we will see there in terms of pricing for the gaming products.
It is hard to say. I think NVIDIA knows that they're sort of competing with themselves to a large degree. And, mm-hmm. you know, most people are upgrading their GPU after every 2 to 3 generations. So thinking about RTX 20 and 30 series owners will need some incentive to upgrade.
Mm-hmm.
So if they're offering the same price to performance as the 40 series, which is very similar to the 30 series, then that two-generation buyer will have nothing, in which case they won't sell anything. Mm-hmm. So I think NVIDIA is well aware of this, and that's sort of why, as you say, like the 40 series is an upgrade over the 20 series for that two-generation buyer, but a lot of that happened in the 30 series.
Mm-hmm.
So they're sort of, I guess they're sort of looking at the data. This is a pure guess from my perspective of why they've made that sort of TikTok decision.
Mm-hmm.
They look at the data. They know a lot of people don't upgrade every generation, so they do this features, try manipulate the pricing a little bit so that by the time next generation comes around, expectations are a little different. They do all that stuff knowing that, you know, generally that's the buying patterns and behavior of customers going every 2 or 3 years. So, yeah, if they want people who do that 2-year upgrade to have something for them, it will need to have a much better price to performance ratio in general. And I think that they've sort of gone a little that way with sort of the Super Series. It's kind of, some of those products feel like a bit of a movement in that direction, sort of admitting that some of those products weren't the best price. So they've adjusted things slightly. So yeah, we'll see what happens with the 5000 series. I do expect some improvements, but then again, if there's no improvements, it'd be another very sad time for us reviewers for a few more years.
You've talked a bit before about a Radeon GPU needing to offer about a 10% discount per frame to be worth losing features like DLSS and ray tracing. If you had to come up with a similar number for Radeon versus Arc, what would it be? That's a really tough one. It's a tough one as well because Arc is improving all the time. There's not the big gap there to ray tracing, but then again, like how relevant, right? We've had this discussion, how relevant ray tracing is on an A770 is questionable.
I think with like an Arc product, because they're only competing in the lower part of the market, it changes the discussion compared to Radeon, because Radeon, they've got parts right up to the, not the flagship level, but very high end, right? They're selling mm-hmm. $1,000 GPU.
Mm-hmm.
So it becomes relevant when you're talking about ray tracing, upscaling, frame generation at $1,000.
Yeah. So from like maybe $600 and up. And again, it's a moving scale. So these features, what I'm trying to say is they start to become relevant in our opinion at $600,
mm-hmm.
Maybe $500 for like the new 16 gigabyte 4060. It's a pretty crap product, but anyway.
Yeah.
But certainly from $600, they're certainly relevant. At that point, and they become more relevant as you get to 800, you know, 1,000 now, and then 1,600 or 2,000, whatever the 4090 is. So You're saying that the features that warrant that 10% difference are really take place at those price ranges.
Yeah, and I think when we're looking at a $250 to $300 GPU, which is typically where the Arc products have been, it is much more heavily skewed towards rasterization performance, because I think that's what most gamers after that sort of, you know, spending that amount of money are after, is that they're after the performance that they need first and foremost, and then the upscaling side of things, the ray tracing performance, those sort of things become second. Like, there's still somewhat, like, maybe not ray tracing, but upscaling is important. Intel has got XSS, which is quite decent, especially on the Arc version.
But you can use it at 1440p on those products without ray tracing.
Yeah, you can, for sure. So I think, yeah, the biggest issue that I would have with buying an Arc GPU is less those features and more, is the game that I'm playing going to be part of the good list of games that run really well and have got driver optimizations? And is that also the case for future games I'm interested in? Because we want to see less examples of titles like Starfield, for example, where it launched and it didn't really run super well on Arc GPUs to begin with, and owners of those GPUs had to wait, I think it was
3 weeks or something.
3 weeks, 2 or 3 weeks, mm-hmm. to get an optimized driver where the game actually worked quite well. So
I think it worked. I think worked. Quite okay. Well came later.
Okay. I wasn't quite sure whether it was like not worked versus worked, or I think worked it was poorly versus
initially
worked.
It just didn't really work. Right. Is my recollection of what went down there. Then you got a driver that sort of made it work, and then it's sort of got better as time's gone on. But
so that's the issue, right? Yeah. It's like you can look at the list of games now and sort of look, okay, well, most of the games I'm playing now are probably supported, especially newer titles. Intel's done a really good job of supporting the big newer games that you want to play. Mm-hmm. But it's always that risk of like, do they have the trust yet, mm-hmm. to say that all the games I'm interested in throughout 2024 are going to work well on that product and give me performance equivalent to buying a 6600 or 6600 XT or whatever the equivalent price, mm-hmm. is from AMD at the moment. And I think I'd be still wanting a discount at this point to definitely mitigate that. So whether that's 10% or 20%, probably more like 20% is around I'd say where at I'd least be considering.
I'd want, for similar performance to a Radeon GPU, to answer the question, I'd want at least a 10% discount, because every single time I benchmark an Arc GPU, I either find a game that crashes or won't load properly, mm-hmm. or has some sort of weird workaround I need to do. Like, for example, Halo, just Intel keeps telling me, oh, the new driver fixes this or whatever. Halo won't even launch from Steam. You need to do a custom command to tell it to force the DirectX 12 mode. Really? Then it will run. And then every time I test it, like, all the textures are missing.
Right.
So I have problems with that game constantly. But there are other games as well, like The Last of Us Part 1. Last time I tested that, it kept crashing when it was building the shaders. And I have had it work, mm-hmm. but it was... it was a runaround, yeah. Whereas, you know, the Radeon GPUs, the GeForce GPUs, I haven't really had any problems like, mm-hmm. that for a long time. They generally just work.
Yeah, so I think it's about that. It's kind of for the diverse gamer like myself who plays a lot of games throughout the year, I'd be wanting more of a discount. But then again, similar to the AMD versus NVIDIA discussion where we say, you know, you might want a 10% discount, mm-hmm. some people are willing to pay the same price because they're not interested in those features or whatever the case may be. So if you're interested in, let's say, one or two games, like you're playing multiplayer games or whatever, you've got your choice of titles and they work really well on Arc products, then yeah, you'd be not as concerned about, am I getting 10 or 20% off? It would just be, what's the best value? What's giving me the most performance for those games? So yeah, I think they're in a position where they need a discount generally speaking, but again, we've seen quite a lot of improvement from Intel over the last year or so. So for the next couple of generations, you'd be hoping that that amount of discount that we're saying now is shrunk down. Yeah. So we'll see.
With how cheap 8-core parts are getting, so 8-core CPUs, is there any place for 6-core CPUs in the mid-range anymore? The core thing, CPU thing.
They're not that cheap.
It's a tough one because, I mean, I'm trying to get into this without going down this, opening up this can of worms on how many cores you need for things and stuff, because the amount of people that said, oh, you know, when Zen 4 came out, there's no way I'd buy a Ryzen 5 7600X or 7600, because who's buying an 8-core CPU in 2023 or whatever it may be? And then you look at that CPU today and it's, you know, as fast or faster than the 5800X 3D. which has been heralded as being such a great value, awesome, powerful gaming CPU.
Right. So you wouldn't have bought a 6-core because of the, that was the theory, right? You wouldn't have bought a 6-core.
Well, again, it comes, we try not to focus on core count. While relevant within their own product lineups, universally, not so much. So it really comes down to the overall CPU performance. So core count's relevant when you're picking between, say, a 7600 and a 7700. If the 7700 is only slightly more expensive, probably worth getting, because overall it'll have a lot more CPU performance from having those extra two cores. But again, if you're comparing a 7600 to a 5700X or something like that, then the 7600 is way better for everything, really. So it's just a much better, more powerful CPU. So if Zen 5 ends up offering the 20% IPC gains, then a 6-core processor, it's going to be pretty fast.
Yeah, that's right. So, yeah, I guess from my perspective, I don't think that the gap between 6 and 8 core is cheap enough to make that statement yet. If you're talking about, let's say there was a $200 6 core and like a $220 8 core,
sure,
then yeah, you, in most circumstances, you would just get the 8 core model. But we're still talking about a relatively sizable gap. And this is also true for parts of the Zen 4, I mean, the Zen 3 lineups. If you're still buying your AM4 upgrade path CPUs, it's changed a little bit now with the 5700X3D offering that sort of lower cost option for people, which is still an 8-core part. But yeah, it's generally speaking, the 6-core options, they're still viable. They make sense.
So to back up what you're saying, AM4, for example, you're paying $130 for a Ryzen 5 5600 or $205 for a 5700X.
It's a substantial difference there.
Prices have moved around, but as we're filming, that is the current retail pricing of those two parts.
So yeah, 6 cores, they definitely still make sense. I'm sure there will be a time in the future where sort of like quad cores and dual core parts, they will become this diminishing returns thing where it's so cheap to get a higher core count part that you just wouldn't bother with the 6-core models. Mm-hmm. But I would imagine that a big staple of the Zen 5 line will be a 6-core processor around that mainstream price point. So I imagine 6 cores will continue to live on and continue to be relevant even with 8-core options.
It's just because having more powerful cores means you need fewer of them. Mm-hmm. So as CPUs get more powerful per core, then the demand for 8, 12, whatever core CPUs becomes less and less for gaming, because we're not at a stage yet. Like, how long have we been talking about gaming, saturating? Pick an 8-core CPU. What CPU do games saturate? Like, they don't saturate a 5800 X3D or even a 5700X or a 5800X.
No, they're all limited by cache performance, single thread performance for gaming, typically memory bandwidth and those things.
And we saw it, the Ryzen 5 5600 murders the new 5700 CPU, or murders maybe a stretch, but it beats it comfortably in most games because it has twice as much L3 cache. So cores, again, as I said in that video, within reason, aren't that important for gaming performance. There's a lot of other things that go into making a powerful CPU. So, yeah. But anyway, I think we've answered that question and then added to it. How does the actions of the industry personally affect you? Do you often feel frustrated, or perhaps you feel positive about being able to spread customer awareness? Look, I'll be honest. When the when there's more interesting things, more exciting product to talk about, it just makes the job obviously a whole lot more fun. If we're excited, if you guys are excited about the products, we're obviously excited about the products. If you guys are bored with the products and don't really care about them, our feelings are much the same. It also means we have less viewership, less people interested in it. So it's sort of a win-win for everyone if it's exciting and good, like it has been in past years. It's probably peak interest was prior to the last cryptocurrency boom. So sort of 2017, 2018, 2019, they were probably all good years from memory. A lot of interesting product releases, a lot of excitement. And then I think it peaked probably during the cryptocurrency boom with your GeForce 30 series, the Radeon 6000 series. They were great product releases, really exciting. Probably got Zen 4 in around there as well. But availability, the whole world went to crap for a bit there, and we're still trying to get it back to somewhere. frustrating, I guess, it's fair to say.
Yeah, definitely.
Even on the monitor front, like, you get these really cool OLED monitors, and then it's like, well, you need to spend like 1,000 $2,000 for a graphics card and make this thing, you know, viable.
Yeah, there's certainly some of that. I think the it depends on like the product segment you're talking about with monitors, whether that's exciting or not. Mm-hmm. Certainly for high-end buyers, very exciting. I think testing out new technology. Every time there's like a new technology, it is interesting to test that out. But the issue with monitors is always that you get many different variants of effectively the same thing and that are all important to test because people are still interested in which are the variants you want to buy, which is similar to, I guess, like AIB GPUs. But
motherboards and stuff as well, yes, can be a bit.
Potentially a bit more important for monitors because performance can differ. It doesn't happen as much on the AIB GPU front. So, yeah, I mean, I found the monitor market probably the most interesting thing to cover of the things that I cover recently. But then there's been some interesting like testing things like frame generation, even if it's something that I personally don't think everyone should be using and wouldn't recommend it to everyone, it's still interesting to cover like a new thing that comes out. And so like, oh, what's going on here? What's the sort of ways that we can evaluate this and test it across a whole range of different use cases, right? So that we can, you know, really try and break it basically, see where it doesn't work, see where it does work. That's those sorts of things are interesting. But when it comes to the actual products that people are buying, generally from the PC component thing, you know, not that exciting. You know, the CPU side of things I think has been pretty good, but CPUs I feel like are very much driven by what's happening on the GPU front. Mm-hmm. Like people aren't as interested in upgrading to a super powerful CPU if they're still using quite a slow old GPU because there's nothing that's interesting them for an upgrade. Mm-hmm. So I feel like if there was much more powerful, good value GPUs that people would be also quite excited about, doing much more significant whole platform upgrades, really. Like, oh, there's this new GPU I want. So, oh, does that make sense with my slow CPU? Not really. Let's get everything upgraded. Let's modernize my platform for gaming and things like that. And, you know, even today, like, you see a lot of games, you know, does it really need a 4090 for some of those games? Games need to improve as well to sort of
deliver. Yeah, that's true. Deliver. Games have been pretty crap.
Yeah, so, yeah, I think that there were a lot of high quality games released in 2023, but not as much on like the you need a 4090 for that type of game. As we move more into path tracing, maybe that's going to be more of a factor down the line. But yeah, I think the general premise of this question is that, yeah, I mean, am I feeling positive about spreading consumer awareness? That's nice, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's good to be able to tell people, hey, you know, maybe don't buy that because it's not good. Like there's always a bit of satisfaction there, but not nearly as much satisfaction as, wow, this is great. Like,
yeah, and seeing everyone getting excited. Yeah, I don't want to complain too much. Like, I love the job. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah. I mean, it's a bit rich of us to be sitting here being like, I look around this room, right, and like people would be astonished about the stuff that's in here, like amount of hardware. And like PC Hardware's shopper's dream to come into a place like this and just build stuff. But
so that side of it's all great. It's more just like when we review the product, it's great to see everyone excited about the product and wanting more information instead of just like just the negativity. And and I'm not blaming people for the negativity. Like we feed into that because we're probably being negative in the video as well.
It's pretty fair. Like I haven't seen any negativity that's been like largely unjustified.
No, it's all justified. Yeah. It's just, I want to be excited about a product and excited to like, oh, I can't wait to show the viewers this new product, like what it offers. You know, this is going to be awesome for so many people. It's we want that because, then we're excited about it. You're excited about it. It's all good. But anyway, fingers crossed that it can happen again.
Yeah, that's right.
It can happen again, Tim.
It can. And I think it will at some point. Again, we've talked about the reasons why for that, but yeah, I think at least we're in a good position where even though things are boring right now and I think views are down compared to what we've seen previously, and that appears to be the case across many tech enthusiast channels at the moment, is that our channel is still sustainable during those times.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, on a personal level, we're doing just fine. Like, we're doing great. But, I never got into this for the money, right? It's my passion for PC hardware.
Yeah, that's right.
That's it's first and foremost.
Multiple
and
different angles.
For the last few years, it's just been like,
And you've probably seen it with my work, right? Like, how much time have I been working on monitor unboxed content versus hardware unboxed content lately? It's been a lot of coverage of, like, the OLED stuff, which personally has been relatively exciting. Mm-hmm. And, like, build guides have kind of not been a thing on hardware unboxed. And there's a few other pieces of content that really haven't been happening just because the interest isn't there. So,
yep.
They'll shift and change as things get better. But yeah. That's the way it is, really.
I might have to start, like, Power Bricks Unboxed or something, and maybe there's more exciting things happening in the Power Brick industry than there is in the GPU and CPU industry.
Yeah.
I'll look into it. Give me some tips, guys, and I'll pivot.
That's right. But I think, you know, we launched a podcast, which I think has been a good way to...
That's been fun.
Good way to spice things up and do something a bit different.
We talk about lawn mowing, getting bitten by various different local insects and things.
You said you'd fight a crocodile in an octagon in a previous podcast, so we're still working on that.
I've reached out to Dana White. Things are things are in motion. Expect that probably as a pay-per-view in the coming months. But yeah, no, a lot of fun things happen on the podcast, so check that out if you haven't. Harbor Unbox podcast. You'll work it out. All right, next one.
Next one.
All right, interesting question here. I think we'll probably do this one briefly. Is the 12th lineup, so 12th gen lineup of CPUs, so Alder Lake CPUs, worthless in 2024? So even if you get a good deal on said processor. So Intel's Alder Lake 12th gen core series of processors, core i3, i5, i7, i9. There's probably some Pentiums in there. if you get one of those processors at a good deal on it, I'm struggling to understand the question because if it's a good deal, it's a good deal. Yeah. But I think what you're trying to say is if you get it at a cheap enough price, are they still worth buying? But of course, the answer is yes. I mean, they're great processors. 13th gen was only like a slight overhaul, some restructuring of cache capacities and things like that, which gave it a bit of a boost, but nothing crazy. You certainly wouldn't upgrade from like, you know, a Core i9 12th gen to a Core i9 13th gen, for example, and certainly not 14th gen because that's just a copy and paste of 13th gen. So, yeah, 12th gen still offers great value. I think I had a look the other day and even the Core i5 12600K was much cheaper than the 13th and 14th gen versions. So,
yep,
get a good deal is a good deal.
Yep. All right, and that does it for part two of the Q&A series for this month. I think we called it the January Q&A or something at the start. So we'll keep going with that one. There'll probably be a part three on the channel as well. So, yeah. Heaps of questions. When you don't do it for a couple of months, turns out you get quite a few questions backed up. A lot of questions in our Discord chat, which is exclusive to our Patreon and Float Plan members. They get their little like special Q&A channel where they can get, I don't know, is it priority access?
Yeah, it's priority
access. It's basically priority access to answering questions. So there's lots of questions in there to get to. So we'll get to those in part three. And yeah, for now, if you're thinking of supporting Hardware Unboxed and the work that we do, we've got our Patreon and Float Plan accounts. You gain access to things like our monthly live streams, which are back on now that we're doing another Q&A episode. We've got BTS content. We got, what else have we got? The Discord, which I've already mentioned. And
of course, the Q&A stuff, which I've already mentioned. So there's stuff there. Check it out if you're interested. But if not, we're not going to hold it against them, are we?
No.
Probably won't. Probably.
I thought about it for a bit. I'm like, it'd probably be a bit rude to hold it against the viewers. So I won't do that, but I will think better of you if you do sign up. Yeah. So
you've caught Tim in a good mood.
All right. That's it for this one. I'm your host, Tim.
I'm your host, Steve.
We'll see you in the next one.